Hello there. Welcome to the Frenchy Podcast, a show dedicated to the stories and legacies of the French-speaking Cajuns of World War II, as told by the veterans themselves. I'm your host, Jason Terrio. For over 20 years, I've been interviewing World War II veterans and capturing their stories. Many of them were Cajuns, people of Acadian descent. When the young Cajuns went overseas, their ability to speak French proved invaluable in military operations, and it had a profound impact on their sense of Acadian identity. What emerged from this unique wartime experience was a long-lost pride in their heritage. When the military needed bilingual interpreters, they called on Frenchy to bridge the language gap. This podcast and book project would not have been made possible without the support of many families and veterans who have shared incredible stories with me over the years. Some of these stories were lighthearted, like when a Cajun soldier met and befriended a French farmer or a French family or a young French-speaking boy who just wanted some American chocolate. How many times do you think that happened to the Cajuns during the war? Hundreds? Thousands? Some of these documented stories are the stuff of legend. But just think about all the stories that we will never hear about. Thankfully, through letters, newspaper articles, memoirs, and interview recordings, the voices of these Frenchies have come alive. Some are short and sweet, maybe just a few lines in a newspaper. Others gave detailed testimony about particular experiences where their French came in handy, or in some cases, saved their lives or the lives of their comrades. This has been the mission of the Frenchy Project, to preserve the legacy of this great World War II generation. In this second part of Finding Frenchy, we highlight a few of these stories, like Charles Ducote, a D-Day veteran who used his French to root out an enemy gun position on Omaha Beach, and Pridgeon Fontenot, one of the last living Frenchies who shared his story in several recent interviews with me and other reporters and filmmakers. There aren't many of these guys left around, but through the methodology of oral history interviewing and family memorabilia, we have preserved the stories of many. The invasion of Normandy was, without a doubt, the greatest event the world has ever known, wrote Ellis Laborde of Avoyelles Parish in 1944 to his boss back home. It was pretty rugged for a few days, he said. We who had taken part in the Sicilian campaign knew what sort of problem we were confronted with, but still, we were willing to take the chance, for we knew the only way home was via France. I'm using my knowledge of French here to some advantage, he wrote. Nelson Dobrock, an 18-year-old chief petty officer from Eunice, Louisiana, wrote his parents about the historic landing. Our crew hit the beach at H hour on D-Day, and we all came out okay. I didn't get a scratch. Thank the Lord. Now it's over and I'm feeling fine. I met French people and felt almost at home. They were nice to me and I was glad I could speak French. Dobrock's reprinted letter in the newspaper captured this headline, Sailor's French Comes in Handy. This line became an often repeated phrase to describe the Cajuns' experience in the Francophone world during the war. Charles de Cody's French did more than just come in handy. It actually saved the lives of some of his comrades during the critical opening hours of the Normandy beach invasion. Ducote, a Cajun from Marksville, joined the Army at 19 years old and spent more than a year of infantry training in the States before sailing to England. He landed on Omaha Beach as part of the first wave of D-Day with the famed 29th Infantry Division. Once his unit made it across the beach and up the bluff, an officer called him up to interpret with a French farmer to identify the location of a hidden German pillbox. Ducote told his hair-raising story to his granddaughter, Nicole, in 1991. When I went searching for Frenchy stories years ago, Charles's daughter, Wanda Ducote, contacted me and shared with me this priceless cassette tape, which she had kept long after her father had passed away. With the aid of audio guru Chris Segura at the Center for Louisiana Studies, we were able to bring this enhanced, digitized audio back to life.
I went down to my high school when I started school at 6 years old, almost seven. I didn't know a word in English. I was inducted in the Army in 1940, July 8, 1943. Took my basic training in Camp Barkley for 4.5 months. Came back on a furlough. got married, November 19, 1943. Stayed 4 days, went and started back at Camborough, and on though to my voyage towards New York and overseas. From there, I was attached to the 29th Infantry Division in a medical detachment. And we took duck problems, maneuvers, until June 6, 1944, our unit was assigned to invade the French coast. And we landed 8 hours, which was the first hour I was in there. They had very fierce fighting. There was about 80,000 ships in that English channel that morning. So about mid-morning, one officer came over to me and said, you're French speaking. I told him, yes. He said, our interpreter got killed. He said, would you wish to come with me? He said, we have to crawl up on shore to the first fresh house and see where the entrance of this pillbox is. We have to knock that out, as they had observers in there. So we did. He said, we'll have to stay apart because they're all minefielders. So we had to crawl separate, but God was with us and we never did hit, come across no mine. We come to this French place, and that was an old Frenchman. And I asked him, I says, where is the entrance of this tunnel, pillbox? They were fortified in there. The coastline made it.
There's a tunnel?
Yeah, it's a tunnel from the inland. From the first highway they had, they go in from there, and then they dug a tunnel through the embankment. And then you see that the shoreline was made of nail, and where we'd land was in that nail, in that strait of that nail. And they could see us easily, and they point blank. Machine gun, shell. They had observers in there to direct other big guns in the rear. So he says, Monsieur, à peu près 3 kilometers. That was little less than 3 miles. Vous allez voir des grandes portes. You will see 2 wide big doors, wooden slats. Couvert with divine, covered with bones. Et il says, ouvrez ça. Ça sera comme un palace. Open that, it'd be just like a palace. And he says, there you are. So the officer radioed back to the tank destroyers. And they came over with 3 or 4 tanks. And they bust out that place, and from then on, after they took the prisoners and we captured them, troops were able to walk in. And from there on, I stayed with the 29th Infantry till VE Day.
Quite a remarkable circumstance in which this Cajun Frenchie found himself on the bluff overlooking Omaha Beach on D-Day with the critical intelligence that likely saved lives of his buddies in the 29th Infantry. No doubt there were many Cajun GIs, hundreds, perhaps more, who experienced the same thing in Normandy in those harrowing days and weeks in battle across the French countryside. We are so thankful to the Cody family for preserving this audio recording, knowing there are countless stories just like this one that were never documented and as such are lost to history. Alton Girard from Broussard, Louisiana, was one of those Frenchies who arrived in France in the fall of 1944 to liberate Europe from the Nazis. He drove a Jeep across France and Germany with a reconnaissance company attached to the 6th Armored Division. As a French-speaking Cajun, he served as a messenger from company headquarters to the command post. We learned about his exploits through his letters, which his family thankfully preserved. His granddaughter, Holly, agreed to come on the program to share some stories with us.
Thanks, Jason, for having me on to talk a bit about our Frenchie of World War II, Alton Gerard, who was an interpreter during the war and started a family business, Tons Drive-In, in 1963, that is still in business today. This letter to my grandfather is remarkable in that it illustrates how he was able to use his French in many situations that were beneficial to his unit. Here's an excerpt from a letter written by his lieutenant. We got to know each other quite well during this patrol time. With your French, we talked a bakery into making us the hard-crusted French bread to supplement our K and C rations. Also, one trip, we stopped at a small village near Saint-Nazaire, and you talked the restaurant owner into making us French fries and chicken for the return trip. We gave them GI lard and flour, plus some cash. Another patrol, we stopped at a bar to get Captain Dan Morgan a bottle of wine, and I stumbled on Vin Rouge or something and bought a cheap vintage. You, with your French, went in and talked the owner into giving us a great vintage bottle from his special supply in the basement. I'm not saying which bottle we gave to Captain Moore and which one the two of us took care of. Then, September 12, 1944, you drove me with all my gear to squadron headquarters to take on the job of squadron intelligence officer.
The Cajun GIs in France seemed to have a monopoly on the communication with French locals. They were extremely popular, always in high demand, and enjoyed the advantages that came along with being a Louisiana Francophone in a foreign land at 18, 19, 20 years old. What an experience that must have been. The same could be said for the Cajuns who served in certain quarters of the Pacific. The French island of New Caledonia, off the coast of Australia, was a hotbed of activity during the war and served as a strategic staging ground for the American forces in the South Pacific. With 50,000 Francophones living on the island, New Caledonia was a perfect location for the Cajuns to utilize their skills. Ford Grimion from the town of New Roads served with an Army supply depot for automotive parts and wrote a series of letters to Southwestern Louisiana Institute President Joel Fletcher about his experiences on the French island. New Caledonia, he wrote, was a choice spot in the South Pacific. That Louisiana French is something worth knowing around here as the native Caledonians all speak French, he wrote. Many northern Yanks would give anything to know as much French as I do. That is what I like about good old Louisiana. You can get along all over the world. One of those Cajuns who went to New Caledonia was John Bacquet, an agricultural expert from Lafayette whose language and skill set made him an ideal farm manager to raise large-scale food crops on the island for the American troops and the islanders. Prior to taking the job, Bacquet held the distinguished position as District Farm Security Administrative Supervisor in Lafayette. His daughter agreed to come on the show and tell us a bit about her dad's unique experience in the Pacific.
Thanks, Jason, for having me on the Frenchie podcast and for featuring my dad in your new book. My dad, John Tourville Bacquet, was born in Maurice, Louisiana on March 26, 1906 to Henry and Anna Broussard Bacquet. He was the oldest of 8 children who was raised on a farm, and his first language was Cajun French. After high school, he attended Southwest Louisiana Industrial Institute, which is now ULL and formerly was USL, where he majored in agriculture and later studied dairy science through LSU. After receiving this degree, the U.S. government was searching for someone with this degree and who spoke French to travel to New Caledonia, which is a French-speaking country. Dad was there for 2 years and during this time taught the local people how to clear land and grow crops. Tons of fresh vegetables were grown and distributed to the U.S. Navy. On behalf of the Bacquet family, we are so thankful that the stories of the Frenchies of World War II has finally been told and preserved. Thank you, Jason.
While much of the historical content for this project originated from family members, there were a handful of Frenchies who I was able to locate and interview in the last few years. I was fortunate to find about 10 Frenchie World War II veterans. Yet as of this recording, only a few are still living. Bridget Fontenot is one of those. he found himself in France in early 1945, a long way from the farm in Rennes, Louisiana, where he grew up. We were so fortunate to have found Pridgen a few years ago, living in a retirement community in Crowley, Louisiana. When I first interviewed him, Pridgen was in his late 90s, and he still recalled vivid memories of growing up on a rice farm as a kid in the 20s and 30s. He had so many achievements in his long life, but he was still so proud of the fact that he was the oldest member of the Rennes American Legion. With that in mind, we decided to have the first Frenchie book event in Rennes at the American Legion Hall to honor this local World War II hero.
Pridgen Fontenot, and I was born in the country south of Rennes, Louisiana, and my birthday was 1925, November the 23rd of 1925. Well, I was raised on a farm with animals, and I was very young and small, started riding horseback. That's our main transportation. And I went to school at a country school called Indian Bayou High School and had to learn from day one how to speak English. We had never spoke a word of English at my house. And they taught us by hand, or go come here and go there, you know, and learn a few words every day, you know, English. And in fact, they dared us to speak French at school. She get called speaking French, she was punished. And then they get punished. They knew we couldn't speak English, but they threatened us with that, you know, to make us learn. I'll get put in a corner sometime, a nose in a corner. We knew just French-speaking people. That's all we knew. That's your language, Cajun.
Pridgen joined the Army in 1944 and did his 3 months of basic. He was assigned to an armored half-track unit with the 9th Armored Division. He arrived in France in February 1945 as a replacement for those killed or wounded during the Battle of the Bulge. Along the way, he had several occasions to use his French language with French people and the Germans who he encountered on the road to Berlin.
We took basic in Fort Hood, Texas, and from there we had 13 days to leave at home. Then we went to Fort Meade, Maryland, got on the boat there like January the 1st, 1945. Because we went to replace all them guys that got killed in Vaston, Belgium. That's who we went to replace. Then I could speak English. I was a senior in high school then. I was speaking English good. But we had a few big guys from the northern states, you know. And then in Fort Hood, Texas, it was very hot. And they'd pass out, you know, if we didn't do hard work one day. They would drop out on the ground. They couldn't take it. And that small man was raised on the farm. We carry our load. What they say most, say we probably had webbed feet like a duck because we was in South Louisiana. Well, if you could speak French, you'd pick up some French right away. The American guys would try to get around and meet somebody, but people didn't want to associate with them too much. They couldn't understand. And I could walk up to 2-3 people trying to visit with them. And I start speaking French, but they push their people away. They want to talk to their friends. Mm-hmm. That's how they were. They want to speak with somebody they could understand and that could understand them. I was raised speaking French. I had to learn English at school. And if you could speak French, you could understand the Germans better than the mother God that could speak French.
Really?
Yeah, we could communicate with the Germans faster than they could. The German language was more, not like us, but we could understand them more, and they would understand our French language more than the one that spoke strictly English. It was nothing that sounded like with the English-speaking people. I could understand everything they say, and they could understand everything I say, you know. They had a lot of advantage over there, yes.
During this interview with Pridgen in 2021, I just so happened to have a little tag-along with me, my son Jackson, who was 10 years old at the time. Knowing this was a rare opportunity for this young fellow to interview a World War II veteran, I gave him the floor.
Go ahead. Ask him what you want to ask him.
What was your most dangerous mission?
It was always dangerous, you know, because we didn't know. We just knew we had no friends around us. The group that was there, anybody we faced wasn't our friends. We knew that. You couldn't turn it back to nobody. Because mm-hmm. you didn't know who was who. I mean, every day was a different day. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what we'd face up with tomorrow. Mm-hmm. One morning they told me, they called my name to go back to the States. So I got on the truck with a bunch of guys. And I'm not sure where we went, but I think we went to England and got on a ship there and come back to New York. It was about a 2-week trip across the ocean there. And we come back and landed in New York, and from there I got some tickets to go home on the train.
After the war, Pridgen, like so many others, got married, settled down, and raised a family. He continued to speak French at home with his wife. And, as in most cases, his eldest child learned to speak the language at home, but the younger siblings did not. The baby boomers, who were born in the 1950s, grew up in a prosperous middle-class American society where the teaching of French at home, for the most part, took a backseat, even for those Cajuns living out in the prairie.
Well, through most of the 50s, I stayed with the Rice. My parents moved in Rain in 1951, so I took my father's place on the farm and went all through the 50s with that. Mm-hmm. And I quit farming and went on the job for several years. Like I worked 26 years for a company after I retired from the farm. My oldest son can speak French. How he learned, I don't know, but the four don't speak a word French. They probably understand, but they don't speak a word. But we didn't talk French very much anyway, but we were the kids, you know. But the old one picked it up, him. They could have learned, you know, because we spoke a lot of French at the house, so with company, you know. But things had changed a lot, you know, by that time.
This concludes this episode of the Frenchie Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Theriault. Check out jasontheriault.com for more information about the Frenchie Project. And for those in the New Orleans area, I'll be giving a presentation at the French Consulate's residence at the end of March in partnership with the National World War II Museum, and I'll be autographing Frenchie books at Museum Bookstore that week. And for those of you who tune into the Frenchie Podcast regularly, we want to say thank you for spreading the word. According to Feedspot.com, this podcast ranks number 16 for the most popular World War II podcast shows. That's quite an honor, don't you think so, Meg?
I do think that's quite an honor. And you know what, Dad? I just want to let you know that I am your number one fan.
Sweet. Thanks, kid. And thanks for spreading the word. Until next time, music for the Frenchie Podcast is provided by Josh Caffrey and Chris Segura from the Center for Louisiana Studies.